Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And for those just joining us, we are looking at what it takes to be successful across a variety of professions. We started out with what it takes to make it in education. And we looked at some of the top principals and deans from the region. And a couple of the themes that really came out there were, you know, having that sense of purpose that you know, what you're doing is really creating value for your community and for the areas that you live in, making a contribution beyond just the dollar value. That's really a trend that goes across not just education, but I was talking to an executive in the media business, and he said, you know, some of my colleagues have died in the line of duty bringing news to the world. It's that important. We're willing to die for it. When we look at how Bank of America started, it was done by an immigrant Italian farmer who wanted to provide working capital to the working farmers who really couldn't manage to finance their crops and often would go out of business for lack of working capital. It was the value he was going to provide to his society that built one of the most iconic banks of all time. So, you know, when we look at value, it doesn't necessarily have to be the doctor saving lives, but it could be basically anything that you really feel that value is. To the marketing individual, marketing is the most important thing in a profession. To the executive search consultant, like James McKenzie was just on, leadership makes or breaks companies. It makes or breaks nations. And you can't see that more clearly than here in the United Arab Emirates under His Highness Sheikh Mohammed, who inspires us all with what a dazzling display he's made in bringing the city up to international standards almost overnight. We have another guest coming on here who is Dr. Hisham Al-Agami. He has also risen to the top of the education game. He is an executive director and founder of Tharawat Family Business Forum, and he's an executive director of IMD, which I believe has just been globally ranked as the 12th best MBA in the world, one of the top schools, business schools, definitely in the world and in Europe. And he is here with us now. Dr. Hisham, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And I understand, is that right? Your school is ranked 12th, or?
No, I think first, thank you for the introduction. You mentioned that I'm a guru. I'm not really, but I'm trying my best. The school, IMD, is a business school for executive education. So one of our activities is MBA. As on executive education, we are ranked number one worldwide.
And number one in the world.
In the world, yeah. And for the executive education. But for the degree education like MBA, we are in the top 12, yeah.
I understand that the average salary of an IMD graduate is $142,000 a year.
Yes, true.
And so there's probably a lot of people make well over that as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so, and that's mostly the MBA students that do that, or?
Well, I mean, as I mentioned, the IMD welcome in the year about 7,000 executives, and among them only 90 MBA. We have a very small class of MBA in compared to other business schools like Harvard, who have 1,000 a year. We have a very boutique class of 90 people. And, of course, these 90 people is receiving a lot of offers. So we are, we have a very, because IMD was created by the industry in 8 years ago after the Second World War. And remain the industry is using us to find talent and to create talent. So, of course, and a graduate from IMD, and this is not a commercial break, but a graduate from IMD receive a lot of offers when he come out.
Yeah, but you have a bit of a strategy there. So you're targeting executives who are already working, who are probably already in the 140, 140 plus income bracket anyway. So it's quite a strategic play.
For the MBA, the average age is 31. It's true for the executive education. We have people from 28 to 65 or 70 even, chairman of companies and so on. But for the MBAs, average age is 31. We have people who say 27 and have people 32, 33. And this is the people we are talking about when we talk about the salaries. But of course, we receive also IMD, receive executives who go far beyond that, because, you know, they are vice president of corporation or country managers of big multinationals and so on.
Why do MBAs help so much? I mean, in a sense, some people actually feel like MBAs can even, you know, ruin your brain because they're teaching you how to push product rather than, mm-hmm. you know, when you look at, for example, Richard Branson or some of the mm-hmm. other greatest, Elon Musk, these guys are dropouts of the MBA program. So,
yeah, absolutely, absolutely right. I mean, MBA is not the magic recipe. I mean, there's no magic recipe. And I liked very much, I followed the discussion you had before with the roundtable of young people. And there is, I agree with them, there is no magic recipe. And there is a way that you want to. MBA is, for some people, is a year for transition. You come engineer, you like to do something else than engineer, you go through an MBA, you change your career. But it's not a recipe for everything. We have also young people who come to us to follow some program, and they are entrepreneurs, and they did very well without the MBA.
Right. So the different reasons, it's not just a passport into, like, no. one of the executives I work with said, you know, if you want to work at the senior level, you know, the MBA is a passport into the boardroom.
I don't think this is maybe in the past. For the time being, is really what you want to do and where you like to be in the next. And we ask always the people when we very clear when we interview people for the MBA, we ask them where you'd like to be in the next 5 years or in their career. And we sometimes recommend the people not to do the MBA, maybe to take another pass. But some people find their way in through the MBA in this transition phase that I mentioned before.
Well, the best part about the show is it's interactive. So if you have a question for Dr. Isham, you can SMS us at 4001 or use your mobile app, which you can download from our website at DubaiI1038.com, and send us a question in directly. But Dr. Isham, you know, I was having an interesting discussion with Mr. Saeed Al-Sharid, who's the vice chairman of Emirates Transport, and he was the first graduate class of Aline University in 1976, and he said that, you know, the equity that being, you know, having a university degree had in the late 70s mm-hmm. was a huge amount of market equity. And, you know, that now has eroded. That if you have an undergrad, it's kind of like, so what in today's term? And now mm-hmm. even as the Middle East progresses even further, it's like, so what? You have an MBA, so what? You have a CFA, so what? You have, you know, it's a strategic process where positioning gets eroded and you have to move into different areas to continue to be strategic. That's true for a business. This is also true for your career. How do you see that value changing, and what are kind of the key things that executives can do to keep their market equity up as we move into the 21st century?
I think you're absolutely right. Things have changed through the years about the degree, the university degree, and the MBA. I personally enjoyed my degree. I enjoyed my PhD. I enjoyed everything I did. But also I recommend people who said, okay, it's not the only path that you can have. I mean, you need to see where you like to be. And the world now, especially in the last 10 years, has changed a lot. There is a great opportunity for young people to do a shortcut in their business and to go and to do a lot of new ideas, because technology is available, communication is available. I travel a lot in Africa, and I talk to a young African entrepreneur, and he is a guy who said to me, just give me an iPhone and Mac, and I will do business around the world from my village. So there's people who inspired by this revolution of technology, and we have to watch them. It's not happening only in the MBA classroom.
So it's really kind of an exciting moment where the rules of the game are changing, and it's very difficult to make a prediction on what's going to happen. One prediction I would hazard to make, though, is the generalist is dead. And, you know, if you look at everybody who's been on the show tonight who's, you know, at the acme of their careers, they have been focused in one industry time and time again. It's years and years and years that these individuals are an inch wide and a mile deep. You know, you're a specialist on family businesses. Mm-hmm. And this is where the future is going to go, because virtually, if I need a specialist in, you know, brain tumors, biogenesis, I can get that person in, you know, 45 minutes on the net. We can Skype call, and we can have these virtual knowledge sharing centers that are going to take place. I don't know if your vision of where the professional development, that the general's dead, that the future belongs to the niche specialist.
Well, I mean, I think I disagree. I agree partially. I disagree with part of it as well.
You agree and disagree at the same time? That's very political.
Yeah, that's very political. We try to be. Yeah. I think the some of the business will need some area of the business, and some sectors will need really what you call vertical integration. People who knows what they are doing. They are very specialized and so on. But honestly, to move the world on and to take care of the sustainability of the world, we need also, I will not tell them generalist, but we call them in French polyvalent. I don't know how the English word for that.
Polyvalent.
And they are the people. I honestly can just explain to you my career. I started as a physicist. I did geology. I did geophysics. I did archaeology, and then I did management. I did a lot of things. And
you have a lot of energy.
Yes. I had a lot of time as well. But I think it is leader nowadays, they need more than one sector, they know one sector, because they have, you know, you are absolutely right. I can take a specialist tomorrow, but what it will be rare in the future is to find what we call them polyvalent or generalist in your term, who can guide a team with multitasking and multi-talent and multi-specialization. And these people will be needed a lot in the future.
Now, but what metric are you using here in terms of you know, the fact that we need these generalists? Because when you look at the data and you say, okay, let's look at the highest paid CEOs of 2012 or 2013, and you know, you're looking at Larry Ellison. He has been in IT, in computers, since he could, you know, before he started working, like at 15, he's tinkering away. Bill Gates, 100% focused in one industry. You know, you look at a lot of these guys, and they have, especially the top three for 2012, 2013, they're myopic in terms of their industry focus.
This is, of course, this is the people that we talk most of the time about them, and the Google, the Apple, the Microsoft, and so on. But you also have somebody like Richard Branson, you know, who did everything in his life, and I consider him one of the most impressive entrepreneurs we ever had in the last 10 years. And he learned everything. He learned everything to reach this level. What I'm
saying, he's almost a dropout. He's the total antithesis. He almost barely finished high school.
That, I agree with you, but he also has this sense, and I had the pleasure to meet him several times. He has this sense of understanding a lot of things happening in the world and bringing specialists together to finalize a product, to bring the product to the next level. But this chief of orchestra, this is what we need. You know, this is the guys who architect, who can see the building before anybody else. And they bring people together to build it.
The chief of the orchestra.
Yeah.
So this is Dr. Isham, and he's sharing a lifetime of research. He speaks 5 languages. He's been a physicist, an archaeologist, a management guru, right across the board. And he is going to be sharing some more of his insights on what it's going to take to be successful in the 21st century.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. For those of you just joining, we're looking at what it takes to be successful. And we've gone through a panel of principals and deans of schools. And we've also looked at a panel of accountants and what value the ICAEW Chartered Accountancy brings to you. And now we are here in the studio with Dr. Isham. Welcome back, Doctor.
Thank you.
For those of you who aren't familiar with Dr. Isham, we have a short bio that we can play there for you, And that will give you a bit more information about what Dr. Hisham does.
Dr. Hisham El Agami is the executive director of the Tarawat Family Business Forum and an executive director at the Institute of Management Development, a global business school based in Switzerland. Since 2008, Dr. El Agami is the publisher of Tarawat Magazine, an Arabian publication for family businesses. In 2006, following a career of consulting and researching family businesses in Asia, Europe, Africa, and the Middle East, Dr. El Agami co-founded the Tarawat Family Business Forum. The forum was conceived as the first non-profit independent private sector family business network in the region and is seen as a hub for family businesses from the Middle East and North Africa. Before this involvement, Dr. El Agami occupied a variety of international functions in a long career with major Swiss multinational corporations in Zurich. He originally studied at the University of Fribourg in Switzerland, received his master's degree in applied geophysics from the University of Lausanne, and his doctorate degree in the same subject from University of Pierre and Marie Curie in Paris. He's also one of few specialists in applying geophysical methods to protect archaeological sites and has published several articles in this field. Dr. El Agami is married with three daughters. He is of Egyptian origin with Dutch nationality and speaks five languages.
Well, that is quite the bio. So, doctor, I don't know, you have a lot of energy to do all of those things.
I was lucky, yeah.
I think just on the break, you know, we were touching on some interesting topics, you know, the difference between creating shareholder value, which maybe was the name of the game in the 20th century, and now as we creep into the 21st century, that we're seeing a bit of shift in the paradigm into stakeholder value. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think I think the matter changed a lot after also the crisis of 2008. People, the shareholder versus stakeholder was always there, but I think what accelerated the discussion about the science of management and management education about these issues is the crisis of 2008, where most of the companies, matter of fact, it was not really only debt and the financial crisis, it was also moral crisis that the people focused on shareholders and they forget the community, the employees, the client, the NGOs around them, who is part of the ecosystem of any enterprise. So what we are saying now is that we are seeing a big shift toward leaders who have to focus and to shift their attention from shareholder value to stakeholder values. And this is need new skills, needs new passion to the business, and need new look to the business. You have to look to the business in a much more holistic way. I just give you an example, if you allow me. If you are a manager of a factory in Stuttgart, normally the infrastructure is ensured by the government and around you, and you can focus a lot on the promoting your business in order to bring value to your shareholder. But if you are the same director outside Lagos or outside Cairo in Egypt, you have to take care not only of your factory, you have to take of the power supply, you have to take of the water, you have to ensure that it's the schools where the kids of your employees are supplied with enough material, and so on. And this is what we called, you have to look at stakeholder values and not focus only on shareholder values. And this is the rule of the game, in my opinion, in the next 10 years.
Some people say that the millennials who are coming in now, the individuals that are growing up with an iPad in their hands, that, you know, one of their biggest contribution will be this empathetic shift of the triple bottom line. And now we're seeing in Canada and the U.S., I think the Canadians are a leader in this, if I'm not mistaken, in the creation of the B Corporation, or those corporations which are committed to a triple bottom line. You see this as one of the big growing trends as we move forward.
It is. And also, I mean, examples that you mentioned is absolutely spot on. But also we see that more and more in emerging economies, like in Africa and Asia, where is a lot of entrepreneurs and business leaders have been developing their business around this stakeholder values, which you make it much more sustainable than the others. And we are fighting poverty, we are fighting scarcity of water, we are fighting food crisis, and as an enterprise, you could not ignore that.
I heard that at some of the leading schools, and especially in the States, and I think there was one professor in Harvard who said, you can clearly see a change in the students that previously, you know, in the 80s and 90s, the mantra would be make money, make as much money as you can. And now he said within the student bodies, the individuals that come with that type, chanting that type of mantra are marginalized and cast aside, and that it is really a taboo conscious state to be in. And that now this even the smartest, brightest sparks, they want to be part of an organization that's making an impact in the world. And I don't know if you see the shift
Absolutely. I mean, the shift is very clear, and we see most of our graduate students from MBA, they are looking for companies where they can have an impact, clear impact. It's not the title who is very interested for them. So a lot of them go to startups and small, medium-sized enterprises where they can play multiple role, and they can have their passion every day, and they can see an impact on what they are doing directly on the client, on the environment, on the community around them. We're seeing the shift very clear. I'm not saying that is not, some people are still interested, of course, in the multinational, because there's great schools in the multinational. You have to learn a lot from multinational. But what I'm saying, there is a sense of entrepreneurship that the young people now saying, okay, I like to do something, I like to try. And you mentioned before in your interviews, it's no shame to fail, but it is the journey is amazing.
So we're seeing this. Many people are saying that this is an evolution of civilization itself, that in fact we're not yet civilized until we, you know, get to this next plane. So this is part of a journey even of our species, perhaps.
I think it is not a choice anymore. It's an imperative. And we are seeing the world around us challenged every day with a lot of emerging challenges, changing fast. This pace of change, leaders have to understand and have to capture and have to direct their business to be adapted to this change.
There's some interesting metrics too around this. I think that there was more than 10 times the amount of money spent on R&D on Viagra than there is on cures for tuberculosis. That there is more than 50% of the food in the world is wasted while people are starving to death. That if you have a toilet today, you are in the top 50th percentile of the world, that 2.5 billion people don't have access to sanitation, and that the richest 40 people in the world have more money combined than all the bottom 2.5 billion people, that these metrics are revolting to the next generation coming up.
Absolutely, and I think this is why people... the young people who have the chance to choose, because sometimes also we have to be realistic. Sometimes you spend so much money in your education, so you like to just have a job and pay back your debt. I respect that as well. I'm not saying, but if you have a choice, and some of them have choices, they go to the challenge. They go to the companies where they can have an impact. I like very much your example and statistic. And by the way, there is an excellent speech of Prime Minister Modi from India talking about all of these things, and I found it fantastic, the statement talking, promising his nation that people will get more toilet and more places because this reflects dignity. So if you are entrepreneurs, you have also to give dignity to the surrounding, to the community around you.
Yeah, and you don't know, you know, if you're sick, if when you're sick, you know, how valuable the sanitation is at
Absolutely.
That point, you know.
Absolutely.
But I think it's 60 to 80% of businesses, family businesses in the region, and that's your specialty. What would you say are some of the big challenges facing family businesses in the region? And before you answer that, we're just going to take a very short break, but this is kind of one of the big themes and one of the biggest challenges facing the majority of people in the region. So we're going to hear more from Dr. Hisham in just a minute, and he's going to be sharing his insights into the biggest piece of our economy, the biggest piece of our market, the family business.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And we have been looking at what it takes to be successful. We looked at, for those just joining us, we had a panel of principals in education talking about what it takes to make it to the top. And a couple of big themes there was having value in your profession, having value in what you do beyond the paycheck, that you really want to make a contribution to your community, to your organization. And another big theme that you really saw was a focus in your industry, accumulating those years in your industry. And then we had a panel of accountants on and looking at what the accounting profession can, how it can add value to your career path. And in fact, all of the individuals that had been qualified as accountants, chartered accountants, were not working as accountants. And I think the big takeaway there was, you know, a qualification like the ICAEW qualification can be a door opener even into the music industry, into any industry. You will find accountants in there, but you don't necessarily have to be working as an accountant. One of them was working as an executive search professional. So those were some of the takeaways there. And then we have a Dr. Isham with us now, who is a executive director with IMD, one of the leading MBA schools in the world, and he's also a specialist in the family business, as well as holding a treasure trove of other degrees. He speaks five languages. You do have access now to a big, juicy IQ. It's Dr. Isham. Welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And so just to ramp our listeners up, Dr. Isham was talking about some of the zeitgeist changes that we're going to see now in the 21st century as business leaders and their staff and team members shift from shareholder value to creating stakeholder value, or the creation of the triple bottom line, and how important it is for organizations today to be giving back to their communities as we see a more empathetic workforce than we've probably seen ever before in recorded history. Dr. Isham, one of your specialties is the family business, which accounts for the lion's share of our economy. What are some of the big challenges that you see there?
Well, I mean, in general, I worked with family business in Europe and in Africa and Far East, and also, of course, since 22 years in Middle East. And there is a common, there's some common challenge and some specific challenge to the Middle East. One of the common challenges in family business is the succession. How to guarantee the first generation is influenced by the founder. The second generation still work with the founder. The third generation does not know the founder anymore. So the spirit of the founder diluted by the third generation. So how to communicate this passion? That's why some statistic, which I don't believe them all, but some statistics say that most of the family business disappear after the third generation and so on. It's not always true, but suppose that is true. It is the issue of how to pass this passion, how to pass the leadership, how to pass the know-how, how to pass your network to your next generation in order to go on and to sustain this family business. In the region, one of the biggest challenge is the governance, is how to, what we mean by governance is how to regulate the relationship between the family and the business. That is the family is not just appointed in the business because it's a family, but it's because of the merit. And I think we saw a very successful examples in this in the Gulf region and the Levant and also in Egypt. And we saw some failure, of course. Like any companies, there's some companies who decline. Family business is not an exception. But the people who succeeded, they prepared their succession and their governance in a very smart way and gradually, and not just before the leader is passing away or ill or something like that. So the challenge is the continuity, is the succession, is passing the power to the next generation, and also creating a governance system that can protect the family, the business, and the shareholder.
But is this not just a tenant of a successful family business? But in fact, when we look to the most successful companies in the world, even the publicly traded large caps, when we look at what makes a successful culture, that this succession planning, or what I like to call the mantra, that if you can't be replaced, you can't be promoted. You know, these are things that, you know, was embedded from IBM, from GE, by McKinsey, that, and even we saw on the panel we had before, the principals that said, you know, you need to have a mentor and a protege. Yeah. That these are tenets of successful culture, and part of a larger leadership narrative that needs to take place. And is this type of narrative lacking in the emerging or pioneering markets of the world?
Well, I mean, your example is absolutely right. I mean, this is, you find it in the multinational. But let us just pass 30 seconds about how a multinational. A multinational has shareholder and the business. These two communities. Sometimes the shareholder, even he has the shares, but he has no emotional relation to the business. He likes to have dividend. He likes to pay back on his investment. He is proud when the company is. In family business, we have a third component called the family. And this increases the complexity by having another emotional dimension. So the shareholder are also family, or sometimes not all the family is shareholder. So there's three components, and you have to put this in harmony together, the three of them. And this is what creates, I would not say always a challenge, but it's also an opportunity, because normally family business, they are faster in their decision. They are here to stay. They have a long-term view. They don't like to hit and go. They look for the long-term benefits, and they have loyalty to their community. So I think there is a challenge, but there's also opportunity. But it's much more complex to manage a family business than a multinational, in my opinion.
You think it's more complex to manage a family business?
Because because the emotional dimension was inside. I mean, if you have your son or your daughter, and you always wish, it is a fact of life, it's humanity. I always wish that my daughter take my place. But if your son or daughter is not capable to do so, how you deal with this? You have to accept it. You have to work on it.
You have to fire your son.
Firing a member of the family is always difficult.
Is your opinion it's the right decision?
Well, I mean, I think first we have to look at the things very, very carefully, because sometimes we say this person is not capable to run the business, but maybe he's not in the right place or she is not in the right place. So we have to be careful about how we deal with member of the families in the business. We have to give them also their inspiration, to respect their inspiration, and to give them a chance to try new things, not necessarily under the roof of the current business, but maybe under the roof of the family, but maybe in a different area. So there's a lot of ways to look at that.
We're coming up to the hour here. What's your final piece of advice or anything you want to leave the audience with before we exit?
I think I have three pieces of advice, if you allow me. I mean, it's advice. There's a lot of advices we can give. This is the purpose of Sarawat. We don't advise people. We let Sarawat family members talk to each other. Because that is the best way. The best way is to listen from another family business who did it, or who went through the pain, or who went through the success and how they did it. So that is our purpose, to facilitate this interaction. But I would like still, from my experience and the experience I saw with a member of Sarawat, that three things we have to focus in. You have to think of building a strong governance system. Family governance, shareholder governance, and corporate governance. And they have to build in harmony. Second thing is to give the young generation a chance to move on and to bring their ideas and to listen to them and to give them the space to experiment in new ideas under the roof of family business and the protection of family business. The third thing is to have to share the network of the elder generation with the younger generation. It's not enough that you just give the person the skills how to manage the business, but just share your network with him. You mentioned that before, network is an important thing in success of the young generation. So sharing your network from elder generation to younger generation is very critical.
And I think for anyone out there who's looking at driving your career forward, you know, taking an acknowledgement of the power of a network and taking time to create a network that's going to help facilitate your success, whether it's asking for a mentor or creating a mastermind group.
Yeah.
Or even just finding people that are your heroes. I find now that it's so easy. You know, for example, you might have a geologist who you respect. Well, today you can go on LinkedIn and within an hour you
Absolutely.
Can be talking to them,
Absolutely.
Sharing information, sharing knowledge, and getting that experience. So,
yeah.
But Doctor, I think I could talk another 4 or 5 hours with you. Unfortunately,
you.
We're coming to the end. I hope I can get you on the show again sometime.
Thank you very much. It'd be a pleasure.
Thank you so much for coming out. That's Dr. Isham Alghami. He is an executive director with the IMD and a founder of Tharawat, a leader in the family business thought leadership space.